I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast. This is going to be episode number 272.
All right. That is Patrick Hester. He's an author and a blogger and a podcaster. You can follow him on Twitter at ATFMB. My name is John Anilio. I am a musician and a composer and a teacher and a podcaster and all that kind of stuff. And you can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. Today, we are joined by Ryan Britt, who came onto the podcast because I picked his book a couple of weeks ago on the show, which is called Luke Skywalker Can't Read. Ryan writes for Tor.com and lots of other stuff, and he's written for the New York Times, the Electric Literature, the Owl, Vice, Clark's World, and as a consulting editor for Story. That was right from his bio. All right, Ryan, thank you for joining us today, Ryan.
Thanks for having me on, John.
And what's your website and Twitter and all that stuff before I forget?
Yeah, my website is just RyanBrittWriter.com.
Okay, two T's.
Two T's. Yes.
Two T's and writer?
and then Twitter is just Ryan C. Britt. Yeah, and my website is in need of a severe overhaul.
Who's this?
Isn't everybody's? Yeah.
And then you say you're like I'm gonna start working on this now, and then you start looking at stuff, and then before you know it, you're YouTube.
Yeah, I would rather be doing like new work than posting my old work on my website. You know,
I think what happens with that sometimes is you start doing it and then you're like, no one goes to websites anymore anyway. Everyone just follows each other on Facebook and Twitter. Why am I putting the time into this? And,
but then when you're looking for a job, people are like, hey, why haven't you posted your latest essays and articles on your website?
And just from a marketing standpoint, John, Facebook wants you to do that. They like that. So
of course, their
whole strategy now is just like Google. They never want you to go to the website. They want you to stay on Facebook.
Yeah. Sure.
I thought about
doing the whole book on Facebook, but then I just realized I would lose my mind.
If you have a page, like if you have a fan page or an author page or a business page on Facebook, and you have 10,000 people who have liked it, now the way Facebook does their algorithms, about 2% of those people will actually see what you post.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
that's so horrifying. Mm-hmm. I assumed it was much smaller percentage.
No, there's two things happened recently. So Google said that we are going to start ranking websites higher if they have a SSL certificate. Up in the URL it says HTTPS, right? Mm-hmm. And then they very quietly also announced that we are now selling SSL certificates.
Wow.
Facebook.
You could buy popularity.
Yes. Facebook said, we really encourage you to get as many likes on your business pages as possible, because that's how, from this point forward, people are going to be able to see your content. They have to like your page. So all these businesses went out and did all these campaigns to get as many likes as possible. And then Facebook said, people don't want to see that, so we're going to cut that off. And now they're not going to see as many business posts. And people were like, what the fuck? And then they very quietly said, oh, and by the way, you can now pay to boost your posts and have more of the people who liked your page see it.
Right.
Isn't that interesting how they do that?
So Zuckerberg really is Lex Luthor. Like,
yes. Exactly. Yes. Without the hair.
Yeah. Well, new Lex Luthor is Zuckerberg.
Well, actually, there's a shot going around on social media of, oh my gosh, what was the guy who played Luthor in Superman Returns with the creepy stalker Superman?
Oh, Kevin Spacey.
So there's a picture of Kevin Spacey where he's got the hair he's wearing the wig, right? That comes out, that looks very much like the kid who played the Facebook
Jesse Eisenberg.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
And so they put them side by side and they're like, look, old Lex Luthor's wig grew into new Lex Luthor.
See, I love that. I like Kevin Spacey in Superman Returns a lot.
Oh, he in was it Parker Posey?
Parker Posey. I thought they were fantastic. Right. That part where he stabs Brandon Roth's Superman and then just holds out his hands like, what? Mm-hmm. I thought it was amazing. And I love Jesse Eisenberg. And I thought he did, despite the people's feelings about that new film, I thought he was great in it. And I don't know, I'm biased. I met Jesse Eisenberg at a reading a couple years ago, right after he was cast as Lex Luthor. And it was a friend of mine's book launch, and Jesse Eisenberg was reading like humor writing ahead of this other friend of mine, and he was so sweet and nice, and all I wanted to do was talk to him about being cast as Lex Luthor. But I maintained like my professional credibility and just like was like acted like I didn't know.
Right.
But he's great. I really
you know him. That he was originally yeah. he was originally they were wanted him to play Jimmy Olsen.
who they systematically murder in the
That's
first
That's why
scene
they did it. Yeah, they yeah. Zack Snyder's plan was he wanted Eisenberg because he was a recognizable known actor, right? So to have him cast in the movie, people would be going, oh, you know, what really meaty role is he going to be playing?
And then it would be Jimmy Olsen
who would be killed in the first 2 minutes of the film, and it would be this shock. Wow, you know, everything is off the table now because they cast this well-known named actor in a part that got, you know, killed immediately.
Right, like killing Liam Neeson in the first scene of Gangs of New York or something.
Right, so it's, you know, it's like it's like in Zack Snyder's cinematic murderverse, this was going to be like the launch. Yeah.
Well, I kind of thought it was just because he played Mark Zuckerberg. You know, that was the impetus to cast him as Lex Luthor, is it the Mark Zuckerberg? But whatever. Yeah. Who knows?
You know, it's funny with that. I haven't seen that movie yet. And what's really I'm usually so.
The new Superman movie.
Yeah,
I saw it, John, and no one has apologized. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm
the only person that doesn't hate it, I guess.
No, there's some folks. I must have seen a dozen Facebook posts from friends that are just like, you know, I know everyone hates it, but I liked it. You know, I saw a lot of that, and we don't need to get in a whole big discussion about that because that could just take up the whole show. But what's funny about that? I'm someone that does not want to be spoiled on things. I'm always like, oh no, I haven't seen it yet. Don't say anything. That I've read all the spoiler posts because I'm like, it's fine because I'm probably not going to go to the movies to see it, and I'll watch it if it comes on Netflix or whatever. And it's so funny how I don't care about the spoilers with that one. I'm just like,
I knew everything that happened in that going into it.
Okay.
And I was really glad that I did because it made me enjoy the movie because I was like I knew all those. I knew the Jimmy Olsen thing. I knew everything.
Well, here,
I was really it didn't bother me at all. I think it increased my enjoyment.
Here's my story. So I had no intention of going to see it for several different reasons.
Right,
didn't really care for Man of Steel.
Neither did I.
Ben Affleck as Batman does absolutely nothing for me. You know, that killed it for me right there because I was like, I still remember, right? I want like a memorial that says I remember Daredevil. And as listeners know, my mom lives in my house, and we'll go to movies, and she likes to go to movies. It's one of the things that she enjoys doing. And she came to me, and she's like, "I want to see this." These were her words: "I want to see Batman kick Superman." Her exact words. And
your
I'm
mom's
like, really?
Awesome.
I said, really? That you want to? She's like, yeah, I want to see that. I'm like, oh, okay. So I got us the tickets at the nice theater where they've got the reclining seats, you know, and everything's assigned, and they bring you your food and drinks, and it's all really neat.
I love it.
So we go there and we watch that movie, and I'm bored out of my mind until the scene where Wonder Woman appears in costume. And then I'm like, oh, that's cool. Good.
Yeah,
you know, finally,
great.
Wonder Woman. Yoo-hoo. Yeah, I was happy about that. We leave the theater. We're in the car. And normally we're having a conversation like, how'd you think about the movie? What'd you think? Did you like it? Did you do this? And I'm just kind of sitting there quiet, and mom's sitting there quiet. And she finally leans over and she says, from now on, you can pick the movies we see. And I looked at her and I said,
which is like the kind of movie you would have picked in theory.
I said, was it that bad? And she said, that was awful. That's my mom, guys. I mean, come on.
Take her to see Zootopia. That's a great film. I'm not kidding.
She loves all the Marvel movies. She loves the superhero movies, you know. So she likes science fiction and fantasy. That's what she likes. She likes to see those kinds of things. But this one did not sit well with her.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know. I don't know. I have mixed. We can leave. We can put it.
I think we have to put it in this because John is dying to move on.
Oh no, it's fine. No, but let's transition to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And before we do that, I do want to mention that if you like the show, if you like hearing these kinds of conversations with people like Ryan, you may want to consider becoming one of our patrons over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. We have over 40 people that support us every month by giving $1 a month, $5 a month, whatever works for you. There's different rewards and perks for different things. So you can watch the live stream if you are at a certain one. You can get... you know, Patreon-only episodes, all sorts of cool stuff.
And, so and as I said last week, if we hit 150, I will wear the ridiculously embarrassing MailChimp knit hat that MailChimp sent to me on the live stream. And I'll take a picture and post it on the Patreon page.
Okay. I'll wear it right now. If you would beam it over to me, I'd put it on right now.
So, yeah, so if you dig the show, you get value out of the show, consider becoming one of our patrons. Once again, patreon.com/functionalnerds. And Ryan, why don't you give us your pick?
Sure. You know, we were just talking about Superman. My pick is, I put it over here so it would be close to me, and now I can't. Ah, there it is. Is this a nonfiction book called Investigating Lois Lane. It just came out with Chicago Review Press. It's by a guy named Tim Hanley. I've been writing a little article about Lois Lane for Den of Geek that should be running sometime in the next couple weeks. It's an awesome, like, history of the character of Lois Lane, like, throughout, you know, the radio shows and the comics and the films and the television shows. It's great. This guy is, I guess, written for Bleeding Cool a lot about female characters in comic books. And I don't know. I love these kinds of books that can really be full pieces of, like, historical journalism about one aspect of something with science fiction or comic books. And I thought this guy's research was just unbelievable. And so many things that there were two Lois Lanes on the radio shows, the various ways that the editors treated the character throughout the years, and how so much of the things that we think about the characters often came from the adaptations, came from the radio shows, came from the cartoons, came from the films, and that she's the most adapted comic book, female comic book character of all time. You know, so in a way, like, because there's so many versions of Lois Lane, that she's so important. A fascinating read, like, very, very not something you could recommend to everybody.
Are you looking forward to the new comic that's going to have her have the Superman's powers?
Yeah, I am. I mean, they've done this kind of thing before.
Sure.
But DC's done this kind of thing before. But yeah, I think that's an interesting character. Something that I like pointing out to my writing students and anybody who will listen is that the two main characters of those of that mythos are both writers and both journalists. And that's kind of like, that enables them to be, their superpowers or their super heroics, Lois and Clark's, are enhanced by the fact that they're journalists. And I think that that's really... really cool. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they couldn't really do what they do without being journalists and writers. And I obviously, as a writer, like, that's appealing to me. So I like Lois Lane.
Cool. And I know you did kind of write a little bit about that in one of the sections of Luke Skywalker Can't Read. So I want to get into that a little later. But Patrick, what is your pick, Patrick?
My pick this week is going a little bit different. The trailer for the new movie coming out called The Magnificent Seven.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
I love westerns. I always have. I love the first remake of The Magnificent Seven, which was done in the 60s, which was a remake, I believe, of a samurai film.
Mm-hmm. It was a Kurosawa film.
Film. Yes. Yeah. So they adapted it to American audiences by making it a western.
Right.
And oh my gosh, the actors that was in that movie were like A-listers of the day, right? And now they've gotten some huge actors to be in this one. Denzel Washington. Oh my gosh, the is it Mark?
Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt's in
Chris
it.
Chris Pratt's in it. Who's
well,
the guy?
Well, that's a given. Any new movie now has to have Chris Pratt in it, right?
Right. Who's the guy from Criminal Minds and Daredevil? He played the Kingpin.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that guy's wonderful. I don't know his name.
And he's like, he's got this full-on beard, and he just looks really scraggly, and he's such a huge guy anyway, right? So he just looks like this mountain man bear kind of person now. So, yeah, and it looks like they really diversified the cast. There's all kinds of different people in it, and it just looks really amazing. So I didn't even know they were making that movie.
Forgive my ignorance, but who's directing it?
Some guy. There's an Hollywood.
Well, I have 100% faith in it then.
Yeah, exactly.
Some guy sounds great.
Don't ask me hard questions. That's like saying, oh, that's a really great book. Who was the editor? Shut the fuck up.
Is that the same thing?
Speaking of, it's not my pick this week, but I don't know if you guys, I mean, most people don't care for the show in the nerd world, but I still have been enjoying what is Legends of Tomorrow?
Who doesn't like the show?
Well, there's a lot of people. A lot of people don't, and so you're seeing a lot of articles now that says, you know, you need to give it another shot. It's smarter than you think it is. That kind of stuff, because it did have a rough start. Which, I mean, what genre show didn't? Other than The Expanse, and even people complained about like the pilot episode of that. But it's like the first.
I think all of these pilot episodes are absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I think that people's standards are really weird. I mean, you've got fake Rory, right? Like now Rory gets to be like a Time Lord.
Gets to be the Time Lord, yeah.
With Brandon Roth, who used to be Superman. I mean, come on. It's awesome. I think it's fantastic. If I was like the Legends of Tomorrow pilot to me was like if I was 10, it would be the coolest thing I ever seen in my life. I think it's great. I think it's perfectly lighthearted. Mm-hmm. And it's about time travel. I think it's great.
My favorite episode was Old Man Oliver.
Oh, I like that.
Where
one
they
too,
come to Star City and the timeline has been changed, and Oliver is no longer the Green Arrow. There's and there's someone else who's taken up the Green Arrow, and you know they even have like the scene right out of Dark Knight Returns. Oliver didn't he like lose his hand or something in it? And,
yeah.
You know, so oh my gosh, that was my favorite episode. And then when they left people in 50s America for two years on accident, right? And three of the team members had to live in the 50s for 2 years.
Well, it's kind of like that. Torchwood, it kind of like it was like the reverse to me of that Torchwood episode where the people from the 30s showed up. What's that?
I loved Torchwood.
Same. Yeah. Same.
Whoa, Doctor Who for adults.
Not Miracle Day.
But with Legends of Tomorrow, the most recent episode was a Western where they went back to the Old West, and they had Jonah Hex in it. And
feels like Justice League Unlimited. It's like they don't care anymore, so they're just going to do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, it's fine. I like it. Look, if you watch these shows, it's cool. And it's cool because it's what was enjoyable about sort of the Western with the Jonah Hex is played by – I never know how to pronounce the dude's name. It's Jonathan Skaich something. It's like S-K-A-E-C-H. He was in That Thing You Do. Remember that Tom Hanks movie where it was like – yeah, he was the lead singer. Yeah. So it's that guy, but now because that movie was – how long was that? Got to be 15 years ago.
Almost 20?
Yeah, probably almost 20 now. So, yes, that dude's like, you know, well into his 40s now, I guess, and so he can – play a Jonah Hex character, and he was good. Now
it almost wipes out that shitty movie.
I like That Thing You Do, man. You don't like
the Jonah Hex movie.
Like Josh Brolin and Megan Fox. I didn't even see that.
Let's create a character for Megan Fox because we find her attractive. The problem is as soon as she opens her mouth you realize what a stupid person she is.
I mean those Transformers films, I mean I really couldn't watch them.
Well, anyway, so we can go off on that. But I'm going to do my pick, which is an album. And, you know, my love of my 80s metal knows no bounds. And I'm picking a new album.
A new album from the 80s. Okay.
Yes, a new album from the 80s or by people. It's called The Defiance. And it's from my favorite record label, which I've mentioned before many times on the show. It's called Frontiers Record. They are a record label out of Italy. I think it's this rich Italian dude that just really likes all that music and just signs all those bands and makes them do supergroup projects where they go, we'll get the bass player from Whitesnake and the guitar player from Winger and we'll get this and we'll put it all together. And I am just, I legitimately just like the new music that these guys make. I do. I know I'm sort of, you know, hedging it as a guilty pleasure, but I really do like the new music that these guys make. But I'm just fascinated by the fact that it's just kind of as an artistic person. And I think, you know, these guys all had their heyday and they want to keep doing stuff. And I like the fact that these guys are well into their 40s and 50s or maybe even older. And they're still trying to make new music. And like, I don't think they have any, maybe some of them do, any illusions that they're going to have hits again. But, you know, they go and they tour their old stuff, but they like making new music. And this rich Italian guy gives them some money to go make new music. So why not? I like it. And they put it up all on Spotify and Apple Music and all that. So this particular band, The Defiance, are actually three of the members of the band Danger Danger, which Danger Danger was like a level C hair metal band. Most people probably don't even know about them. They this is Brian, you're going to love this if you're not familiar with them. Danger Danger had two sort of quasi MTV hits. I remember seeing them. So the name of the band is Danger Danger. One of their songs was Bang Bang, and the other song was Naughty Naughty. So the name of the band is two words, and both of
Danger,
their
Danger,
hits,
Bang Bang, Naughty Naughty.
Yes. Go YouTube some of that stuff. You'll enjoy it very much.
I feel like this is the kind of thing that like Rob Sheffield or like Chuck Klosterman should write about. You know, this sounds great.
Yeah, so I am like in love with that kind of stuff. So yeah, so not only is it one of the members of that band, the other two guys weren't even the original members of that band. They were like the 90s fill-in guys when they were just touring small clubs in Europe. And so I'm just endlessly fascinated by that whole group of guys. And if you like that old music, this is sort of music that sounds sort of like that, but it's more modern. I dig it, but there is a fascinating aspect of it to it that's not musical. That's sort of like, what do artists do when they're sort of past their prime success, but they still want to make music? Well, they go and make music, and dudes like me still listen to it.
So. Yeah. No, it's great. Well, I like that you said the fill-in 90s guys. So it's like the C-list, but like the guys on the bench for that.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
John, did you see the quote that someone, and I'm forgetting who the famous person was that said this, a famous rock musician said that Axl Rose fronting for AC/DC was like bad karaoke?
Okay. Yeah, I know. I think that might have been Roger Daltrey.
I think it was Roger Daltrey. Yes.
Because I saw a lot of opinions about that.
What's like the geek equivalent of that then? You know what I mean? Like, what's the version of that? Like, okay. I think that would be like Benedict Cumberbatch as Khan in Star Trek Into Darkness. You know,
that's really.
Well, it's kind of like with the Superman and Batman movie, the Into Darkness movie. A lot of people that got, you know, that pissed them off, and I just looked at it. It was not a remake of Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. It was their take on Space Seeds.
Kind of. I mean,
no,
without
it was,
the scene
because
where
of the
we
timeline.
Well,
because of the timeline. Well,
right, but if you're gonna remake Space Seed, at least show us the part where they find the sleeper ship. Don't explain it in a line of dialogue.
I got nothing. I mean, that was JJ Trek, so so it didn't piss me off like it did everybody else because I was sitting there going, Wrath of Khan, this is Space Seeds.
No, I agree, you know, but I just think that everything about both of those, everything about the character of, and I wrote about this at the time, everything about the character of Khan is that he is a deeply literate, thoughtful character. In Space Seed, he's obsessed with Milton, and in The Wrath of Khan, he's obsessed with Melville, and none of that is present in that film.
No.
He's just like, what I wrote about at the time is like, what would have been really subversive is to have Cumberbatch quote like Moriarty or something, because of the cultural understanding of the Sherlock Holmes thing, and having Doyle in Star Trek is obviously a long tradition, and you know, he just had these generic speeches. You know, that my problem with it is that it wasn't an intelligent film.
I think that goes to it's new Trek versus old Trek, right? So
yeah,
new Trek doesn't do that. New Trek doesn't go down those roads. New Trek is literally taking the NBC make it less smart pilot, you know, kind of directive, and that's what they're doing in their movies.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the first one, but for nostalgic reasons.
Correct.
And then
yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, and because it wasn't, you know, I think that I'm such a hardcore Star Trek fan. You know, I defend Enterprise, you know, vehemently.
Well, thank you, Ryan, for being on the show this week. John, let's go ahead and wrap it up. And
Yeah, I know. I have all these. I feel like I'm such a
You know what? I say that, but I liked all of the Star Trek TV shows. The original series, The Next Generation, Voyager, and Deep Space Nine. I like them all.
All right, we'll leave it at that. But yeah, no, I think that you know, I talked to Nicholas Meyer on the phone last month about the new Star Trek show.
Oh yeah, which is not going to be in the JJ Trek continuity.
Well, they haven't actually said that yet. That's the thing, is no one has actually said that yet.
I saw an article about it where they said
You got to look at these articles closely and see where they're citing these things.
If true, that makes sense because CBS did not give up their licensing rights to JJ.
Right.
They specifically refused to do that. So the continuity that's in the movies is separate from the continuity in the television shows.
Right. No. I obviously, and I think that it would be smart to not do it. But there's another way of looking at it that if they could is that that old continuity is really jam-packed.
It is. Yeah.
The other way to do it, what Meyer said to me on the phone, and this is something that I think is so interesting about like the culture of how this stuff happens, is as far as I know, I'm the only person that has talked to Nick Meyer on the phone about the new Star Trek TV show. And he said to me that he couldn't say much, but that for Brian Fuller, the showrunner of the new Star Trek show, that The Undiscovered Country was a touchstone. And then about 2 weeks later, I saw an article on like Collider or something saying that they think it's going to be set after The Undiscovered Country, but there was no source given. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I don't know where this is coming from. You know what I mean? Like, I'll believe it when I see it. Like when they have the press conference and Nick Meyer is there with all those other writers, and they say, here's the timeline it's set in. That's when I'll believe what the continuity is going to be.
The story that I read said that it will not be on an Enterprise.
No, right. I think we read the same article.
That it will be an anthology series, which means
whatever
that
means.
They can switch ships from season to season. Like they'll follow characters going from ship to ship, not the ship itself.
I think that they're going to have to do something completely different. I think that it's probably going to be something that's a little bit more political, you know, in the vein of The Undiscovered Country, just only based on what Nick Meyer said to me, is that like the idea, the sense I got was that it'll be about space politics that mirror, you know, kind of what the classic Trek would do with, you know, Private Little War and stuff But I have a feeling it, you know, to me, it sounded to me almost like kind of what Babylon 5 was good at and what DS9 was good at in its later seasons, you know.
Now, what do you...
The large politics...
Brian, what do you think about, and I may be wrong in this, but from my understanding, the new Star Trek show, is it just going to be on the CBS streaming channel, or is it actually going to be on the CBS regular channel as well?
I don't know. I'm a little bit confused by all of that. And again, my feelings about this, about all of these stories as they develop, is I always kind of want to wait for the dust to settle.
Right.
I'm actually still in denial that Doctor Who's not actually coming back this year. Like, I still can't believe that.
I can. I can.
What's that?
Stephen Moffat does whatever the fuck he wants, so I can totally believe that.
But didn't you get the sense from those interviews with Capaldi that it was almost like the BBC bullied them? Like, I almost got the sense that it wasn't even Moffat's call.
I
don't know.
So similar to Batman Superman, there's been a lot of pushback from the fans about the recent shows and story arcs. I personally have felt like a lot of the fun has gone out of Doctor Who with Peter Capaldi and Moffat together. And for example, the Christmas special with River, that felt horribly awkward to me. It was like they tried to take Peter Capaldi and put him into a Matt Smith or a David Tennant script, and it did not work. He did not have that chemistry with her.
I might be, maybe I'm just a Capaldi apologist, but like
I don't think it's Capaldi. I think it's just sometimes it's like if you don't have the good script.
Right. Well, I thought, you know, I mean, obviously I actually really liked the last season and I don't know. It just seems like that overwhelmingly the reviews of it were really positive, as opposed to the previous season, which were sort of like, you know. I don't know. It's weird. I mean, he's definitely not as charming as those two previous guys you mentioned.
He doesn't have
the mainstream appeal.
So I don't know if it's necessarily that, but there's definitely a charm overall for the show that has been slowly eroded by Moffat, because he has stated that he feels like it should be more serious, right? I've always equated it to when Doctor Who came back under Russell T. Davies, Moffat wrote a couple of episodes. His episodes are starkly different from everything that Davies did if you look at them. And so it was almost like he was saying, there's this really great toy out there, and it's called Doctor Who, and all the kids are playing with it, and they're playing with it wrong. So I'm going to teach you now how to play with it correctly, because I'm cleverer than you are.
And yeah, I guess, yeah,
everything that
I don't
he's
know.
Done, everything that he's done has been clever. He always does these clever things.
Yeah, I guess that I do prefer Davies' tenure, obviously. But it's just like I have this weird sympathy for the sort of hate that's been piled on Moffat, and I developed this sympathy when I interviewed Mark Gatiss this past October for the screening of his Doctor Who episode, and he was just saying that he felt like that he would never want to be the showrunner of Doctor Who, because he felt like that the amount of scrutiny that it has now is what it had when Davies launched it.
Sure.
And so while I kind of like agree with everything you're saying, I also feel like that we wouldn't even be able to have these opinions if the show hadn't been so charming and successful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And so there's this weird paradox for me of like how much, I don't know. I think it's good that he's leaving. I would have preferred a different showrunner than Chibnall, right? But I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm just bummed out it's not on. I understand,
but here's the thing. I used to be ridiculously excited. I couldn't wait for Doctor Who every year. I was like, I was watching, I was refreshing the page. Like, how much longer? Is there a new trailer? Sure. Is there a new anything? I haven't done that in probably three and a half years. I don't know.
I think that, you know what, my other bias is that I really liked Peter Capaldi in the Thick of It and in the Loop. And so I find his grouchy humor to be really great. So I guess that, but I know what you mean. I remember being really excited for like the Matt Smith second season. I have not felt that since then.
Now,
I hear you. Yeah.
Now, here's the problem. We've spent 33 minutes talking about this.
Oh, no.
John has not yet got to ask you about Luke Skywalker. So go, John. Go.
Ryan's book isn't just about it's a series of essays, and that's one of the essays in it.
Yeah, there's a Doctor Who essay in there.
Yeah, no, this is all relevant to everything you're talking about between Star Trek and Doctor Who. This is all like, to me, it's like this is sort of natural conversation that we're having. This is the best plug that Ryan can have for his book.
Thank you.
Once again, Luke Skywalker can't read and other geeky truths, but that's what the book is about. If you want these kinds of sort of in-depth analysis with humor. And I think one of the things that, and you mentioned it before when I was talking about the recent metal stuff, and you mentioned Chuck Klosterman and Rob Sheffield, and those are two of my favorite writers specifically for nonfiction. And
same.
Yeah, Klosterman to me is, he's one of the writers that, I know it's kind of weird, and I mentioned on the show before, but like I did not really read much as a teenager. I didn't really read for pleasure until I was an adult. And his book, Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs, was the first book of his that I read. And that to me just sort of got me on the path to reading, because it really spoke to my generation. I think he and I are about the same age. I'm 42. I think he's around.
Yeah, no, you're right in that age range.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're old. And,
a little older than me.
Yeah, you're old. Yeah.
He's like 10 years older than me. I'm really going to be 35 in August. So
yeah. John.
Like, yeah.
John is way old. Yeah.
No. That book was a touchstone for me for Luke Skywalker Can't Read. And it's funny. I actually saw Klosterman's editor the other day and was talking to him about Klosterman's new book. But yeah, both of those guys were definitely influences on me. You know, when I moved to New York City, like, you know, like almost like, well, coming up on 12 years ago. When
New
I was
York City.
But, you know, with kind of this idea of pursuing my writing and not really knowing what shape it would take. And then, you know, like 9 years later, the shape it takes is writing, you know, cultural criticism about science fiction and this kind of stuff that we're all into. But yeah, my touchstones were definitely, there's not a lot of like, there's not a lot of criticism about this kind of stuff we're interested in from the previous decades or the century that's written by people who are anything but insiders, mm-hmm. right? There's like wonderful books by like, you know, Samuel Delaney. There's a great Ursula Le Guin book about science fiction that's called Dancing on the Edge of the World. I always am saying this to my friends and they get really sick of this because they'll mention a science fiction writer. And I'll be like, oh, you should really read their nonfiction. Yeah, right. Like, well, Asimov's got all like this nonfiction that I'm obsessed with. So those were all influences in terms of research and continue to be. I just picked up like this book just a couple days ago. That's by a Swedish guy from the 60s about a history of science fiction. So I love nonfiction about science fiction, but most of those books were written by insiders, by people that were in the science fiction publishing community.
Do you like it when there's personality in those pieces? Personality.
I do. I mean, I think that it's essential. You know what I mean? And I think that was also something that I tried for in this book, you know, that you know, is something I've said before, is like, you can't always do in an article online. You know, the title essay, Luke Skywalker Can't Read, was originally published as Most Citizens of the Star Wars Galaxy Might Be Illiterate on Tor.com, like now, like 5 years ago. Right. But in that piece, I couldn't do any of my like personal sort of anecdotes about my own childhood and stuff like that. Whereas in a book, you can.
What about in the X-Wing when he's flying and the characters are scrolling across the screen and he answers?
You know, I've never gotten this question. No one has ever thought to answer.
Ever? Really?
I'm joking. Okay, obviously,
I'm just curious.
Half of my life is spent responding to people on Twitter who haven't read the book or the essay.
I'm not wrong.
I'm just asking. I'm just joking. Know, like, I'm just joking.
I was wondering if obviously you covered that. John read it, I haven't. I never get the books, so.
I've covered it. Yeah, the idea is that, like, and I think that people, this is actually funny because now I'm, like, a few months out of having the book come out, is that the idea behind the essay is that we're dealing with a society where the reading is extremely limited, and by people that are essentially poor and disenfranchised, their reading is directly related to tasks. Right, so it's not like Luke is functionally illiterate is the idea, and that all of the reading that we see is directly related to tasks. And so my idea was that the people that read books and wrote books or the equivalent thereof were the Jedi and the rich people like Princess Leia, but most of those people get murdered in the prequels. And so the only people that have like access to hard data and characters are the people in power, the Empire, and then the First Order.
So I had the reason I asked you the question, and I'm sorry, John, I know I'm just like stealing the whole show from you. But the reason I asked the question about the essay is because I was asked to write an essay for Apex, for an anthology that they just kickstarted. And me being me, and John can speak to this, the essay draft has my personality quite thoroughly throughout it. And my editor was very kind and said that she liked the essay, the draft and everything, but she did make the comment that it'll be a nice counterpoint to the more academic essays in the piece.
Well, we don't need any more academic essays. You know, we need more personality. You know, I don't think that there's no shortage of people's academic essays about speculative fiction. There is a shortage, I think, of blending that kind of authority with personality, because you have to have both, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, obviously the thrust of that essay and the book in general is also to be hyperbolic on purpose to get people thinking about it. And I've found that a lot of really hardcore Star Wars fans have taken my book a little too seriously, which really frustrates me. You know,
yeah, and it's like, I can't imagine that with Star Wars fans.
I feel like I know what it's like to be George Lucas because, you know, if you have an opinion about Star Wars, people will just go at you. I block like them. One person a week.
I've never seen Star Wars fans go after anyone ever for anything. That's so out of character.
You and Chuck Wendig should sit down and have a drink sometime.
We're supposed to do a podcast because we technically have the same publisher. We were supposed to do a podcast together, and it never. He was
I can
sick
make
or
that happen. I can make that happen. But
well, my publisher is supposed to. I think he's great. He's wonderful.
If you do meet Chuck, he prefers gin.
Oh, good to know. I prefer gin. That's my drink.
Well, there is a gin now that supposedly is also anti-aging.
Oh, wow. I love this.
Yeah. But
before we wrap it up, I did want to mention that, you know, we talked about Klosterman and Rob Sheffield and personality, and that's one of the reasons I picked this as a pick of the week, is because that's it is talking about these topics that I'm interested in, that, you know, most of our listeners are interested in, but it is the personality, it is the personal stories, and because then it makes it even more relatable, because it's not just that we enjoy these things, it's that these things form, you know, in some ways the basis of our personalities in some ways, and of our, you know, just our different experiences, and that's what it's about, I think.
Well, I think so too, and that's really kind of you to say. I'll just have you, and next time I'm doing any kind of promotion for this, I'll just have you come along and explain why the book's valuable. But thank you, I appreciate that. That's really kind.
No problem. But we do have to wrap it up, unfortunately. So once again, the book is Luke Skywalker Can't Read and Other Geeky Truths by Ryan Britt, B-R-I-T-T. It is available everywhere. You can check out Ryan's website. It's RyanBritWriter.com and Twitter at RyanCBrit. And you're still writing, you're a contributor to Torn right now. You're not.
I was a staff writer there for like 3 years, and then I kind of went off to be freelance. So now I do stuff for Den of Geek and for Vice and for Electric Literature and for Tor.com. Still, I've got some Star Trek stuff coming out with them and maybe some other places very soon, but I can't.
Okay.
You can tell us. It's okay. We'll keep it a secret.
Yeah. No, there might be some other big developments with places I'm contributing to, but I can't reveal it yet.
Well, we will be on the lookout for that, and maybe Patrick can get you and Chuck on maybe.
I would love that. Yeah. Random House was supposed to figure that out. Ryan, never happened.
Ryan, check your email.
Thank you.
All right. So that's Ryan's stuff. So go and check all that out. Again, if you dig the show, consider becoming one of our patrons, patreon.com/functionalnerds. That's it for this week for me. Patrick, anything you want to mention before we have to go?
Probably.
Yeah. I don't know. There's always something going on. Go follow us on Twitter. Patrick also does the SF Signal podcast. So check that out if you enjoy this kind of thing too. All right, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?